Hey guys, welcome to episode number 50 of the Vita Tennis Podcast. Yes, you heard that right. 50. That's a big milestone for me, and I am patting myself on the back. This is a one-woman show, and I'm the one producing, editing, recording, doing all the social media and all the things. I'm learning so much in the process, and I just couldn't be more grateful to all of our guests for sharing their time with me and also our listeners for tuning in. Vita Tennis is just over a year old. My first episode where I interviewed Jay Shetty was published March 8th of 2023. So that means I came somewhat close to an episode a week. So I am celebrating that. I have gained so much from just having conversations with fellow professionals in this industry, people that I really respect and people that are super passionate about tennis, the best sport in the world. And I have gained not just knowledge, but something much more profound, which is connection. I really hope that if you are a regular listener of Vita Tennis, that you feel the same way. I want us to connect, to help each other grow, and to motivate each other to successfully continue with this amazing career in tennis that we have chosen. Everyone talks about the lack of coaches that we are currently experiencing, and it is harder and harder to fill coaching positions, and even more difficult to find women coaches. So we need you to stay in tennis and to grow, to be successful, to have open conversations, share information, and help others along the way. That's what Vita Tennis is all about. I got some really nice messages about last week's episode with Margie Zesinger. I mean, duh, she's amazing and well-respected, and I'm going to share something kind of cool with you guys, and that is that the one and only Danielle Collins liked our post on Instagram regarding Marge's episode. She probably knows her from IMG, I don't know, but still, that was just so cool to see on my phone that the Danimal had liked our post. Danielle is great. I love that she's fierce and feisty, and she is unapologetically herself. She is having the best time in her career right now, and I hope she continues with this amazing run she's having. Today's episode is a conversation I had with a fellow Venezuelan, Rubén Herrera. Rubén has had a crazy run in the tennis industry, kind of all over the place, from coaching to running a club in Germany to being involved with multiple tech companies and associations, federations in the tennis world. So this was a really interesting and just kind of a different conversation. I really enjoyed talking with him, and I have no doubt you will enjoy the interview as well. After we ended our recording, we talked a little bit more about technology, and he listened to me rant about the lack of good data about podcasts and how I just don't buy any of the stats that are out there. And he talked to me about how passionate he is about safe play and how he wished he had talked about it in our conversation. Now, we didn't get to talk about it, but he wishes that they implemented safe play in Europe as well. You know, I have heard from a few coaches here in the U.S. about how annoying it is to have to do the safe play training. And I get it. I have done that training, and it does take at least an hour. But I think it is important to bring awareness and education to all coaches about safe play. Anything we can do to make our sport safer for athletes and minors in particular, it's just so important and much bigger than being annoyed by a one-hour training that we have to do once a year. So let's get with it. Let's do what we can to make the sport safer. And really, it's just about protecting our youth. Please visit VitaTennisPodcast.com for all things Vita Tennis. And if you would like to support the show, please leave a review on your podcast platform and help spread the word about the show. Get ready to hear from one of the best out there, only here at Vita Tennis. Enjoy. Welcome to Vita Tennis, the podcast for those of us who eat, sleep, breathe tennis. Today, we get to hear from Rubén Herrera, Managing Director of Base Tennis. a boutique tennis school located in Germany and first in Europe to host PlaySide on all their courts. He's deeply involved in sports technology as a co-founder of Base Edge and Exo Sports Management, and doing consulting work with federations, clubs, and academies on how they can implement different technologies. He also has a passion for helping coaches thrive in their careers, and he's starting a program called Win the Toss to help coaches grow their businesses. He played tennis at Jacksonville State University, and he's a fellow Venezuelan living in Germany. Welcome, Ruben, to Vida Tennis. How are you?
Doing great. Thank you so much for the intro. I'm going to use this one from now onwards to my meetings. That's amazing.
Yeah, you've been kind of all over the place, so it was very challenging to narrow down your bio because you've been involved with so many different projects, and from talking to you, you're taking such an interesting path in your career in the tennis industry. But you've listened to this podcast before, so I always like to start with how you got first in the tennis industry. Did you see yourself doing this in your future when you were a student at Jacksonville? How did you get started in this whole thing?
No, not at all. My very first job was an internship. I was studying in the US and I spent my summers at home. My dad ran the Venezuelan Tennis Federation and I helped over the summers in the performance and development training with the coaches. That was my first job. I didn't want to be in tennis, to be honest with you. My dream was to be like the marketing VP of Coca-Cola or something big like that. It was the biggest company in the near from Atlanta where I was studying. And that was the very first thing. So long story short, my career, that's why it's so, with my bio, it's so strange. I have been in many industries, education, advertisement, coaching, sports tech, health tech now. And in 2008, I came back from the US and I lost my job. And a friend of mine said to me, why don't you come back to tennis? And I was like, I don't want to coach. Not sure that's for me. And two other friends had a company and they were running clinics, exhibitions, and doing the business part of it. And the moment I got to work with them, Jennifer, it was super nice because I could combine my passion for the sport, but also developing the business, the marketing, having a brand and so on. So in 2010, my roommate called me, Rodney Rapson, and then he said, do you want to come to Germany and start a boutique tennis academy with me? And we went back and forth on how we wanted to do it. And we both said, as long as it's not only coaching, let's go for it. And we did.
And this was your college roommate?
This is my college roommate.
Wow. So you were in the US at the time?
No, he was. This is crazy. I lived in the US until 2008. Then I went back to Venezuela for 2.5 years. And he was already in London. And he was getting married to a German girl. And we played in Germany. The biggest league actually is in Germany. It's massive. From Bundesliga all the way down. We didn't play Bundesliga tennis. But anyway, I've been in Germany in 2005. So I loved it. I had a great time. So I kind of been here before playing club tennis. And I just moved. It was very hard actually to get the visa and everything straight. But once we started, we got it going.
And did you actually get into coaching? Or were you more on the business side of it?
No, I love coaching. There's nothing... There's nothing more rewarding than coaching or education in that sense. You cannot put a price to it. You cannot even express it into words. I think it's the connections that you build with the people that you work with. You cannot put a price to it. It's too good.
Yeah. No, I love that. Because you said you didn't want to go, or you weren't sure if you wanted to go into coaching. But
no,
then
no.
You ended up actually coaching.
Well, once I was in, I was reading, I was doing my certificates. I was just trying to get to be the best coach I could be. But at the same time, it was really hard because we were trying to grow the business. Imagine two guys who do not speak German trying to set up a business in Germany. We only have three players. One was a guy from London that came back with him, performance players, and the other two players were his brother and sister-in-law. I'm not joking. So we had two coaches, three players, and we started from scratch. So it was slowly but surely winning customers around, winning clubs, learning the language, learning the law, learning the pricing, the competition, it was very challenging.
But sure. I can't imagine just, you know, learning the language alone. And I love learning languages, but I gotta say German is, so far as like my kryptonite language, I cannot with it because it looks like English, but it's pronounced like Spanish. It's like, or like bad pronunciation. So it just messes up my brain and I cannot handle it. I'm very good with French, Italian, even Portuguese, all the Latin languages, but German is like my kryptonite.
It is not that simple to learn. It was easier for me to learn it from English than it was to learn it from Spanish. Yeah. But then, as you said, the pronunciation goes more towards like Spanish looks like. And I was like, This is how it works. I get by, but I don't feel like that comfortable with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've been here for 13 years.
That's incredible. So how long did it take you to learn German once you got there?
Enough to get by about 8 months.
Okay.
Because I was in Meres, so I had no choice. And Germany makes you do like an integration course. So I had to go in the mornings while managing work. Then afterwards, the big jump came when I met my now still girlfriend, and her parents didn't speak any English. So I really had to step up my game. So that's when I literally say, okay, I now speak this language.
Nothing like love to make you learn a language.
I know. But you know what? I'll tell you a funny story. It's like when we met, I was a bit cheeky because I said to her, look, our language is going to be a neutral one. I speak Spanish, you speak German, let's speak English. Because when a guy gets into a discussion, argument with a girl, you never win anyway. So if we do this in German, you like are going to walk all over me. So let's keep it neutral. Well, my English was a bit better than hers, to be fair. But now the relationship is in English, to be funny.
Awesome. So how much were you able to grow the program? How many courts do you have? Tell us about that club.
Yeah. So at the beginning was a hotel with 3 indoors and 2 outdoors and a club next to it with another 4. But we were very fortunate that one of the players I taught, she ended up going to the US, play college tennis. Her dad trusted us and he bought a club in the next town with 5 indoor courts. And he gave us the full open management of that place. And that was in 2012. And next to it, there was 6 outdoor courts. So we managed in winters, 2 seasons, 5. And as soon as we had the summer season, we could expand to 11 courts. At some point, we were having about 150 players, just juniors. We also had teams. We had 20 tournaments a year, just weekends. We hosted Tennis Europe events. We hosted international events with the Pro 10 circuit. It was fun.
Yeah. And did you notice any major cultural differences amongst, well, now you've seen what tennis looks like in the US, what tennis looks like in Venezuela, which could be very similar to all of the countries in South America anyway, and going to Germany, which is a completely different culture. How did that translate for you?
Oh, that's a very good question. Okay, let me try to compare the 3 places. American culture is very go get it, is awesome, keep on trying, like kind of upbeat to it. And it's very competitive. And the school system helps you actually develop athletes. Germany is more disciplined, more reserved, more quiet. Can you imagine a Venezuelan how loud, like outgoing? Like people looked at me like, what are you doing? It took me a while to get my tone right as well. So that was something that for me was really, really hard to find that. Again, it was a language barrier, but it's also a different culture. And for us, I guess, as Latin people, that was a way of like, again, so our physical spaces are much more closer than spaces in Germany. The high fives, like maybe a hug, like you get close to the player, whatever it is. Germany, the distance is right there. So you kind of like keep that distance. It took me a while to kind of like get the nuances and when people will be like, okay, that's how they do it. And quite the opposite. What I found that it was really fulfilling is once there was a relationship, Germans are so like all the way with you. they are very, very faithful. Like once there's a relationship, there's trust, they will, it's also the way they work in business. You may have a better product, you may have a better service. That doesn't mean that I'm gonna go with you right away. You have to earn my trust first. And the beginning, when we didn't have the connections, the network, it was really hard because we had to earn that trust. But it was nice. It was, you respect that. You actually do.
Yeah. And what does adult tennis look like in Germany? Because I noticed that in Venezuela, there is some adult tennis, but not a whole lot. It's more geared towards juniors. And I think a lot of countries can be like that. Here in the US, you go to a club and it's basically equal. Sometimes it's even more adults than kids playing tennis, doing clinics and things like that. What does that look like in Germany?
Very interesting. I think I mentioned this before. The biggest league in the world is the German league. And the second biggest, crazy enough, is Alta in Atlanta. So adult tennis is big. It's the biggest federation in terms of memberships in the world.
Oh, wow.
Now, it's not, and again, this is where the differences come. Compared to the US, you do not expect that cardio tennis and ladies in the mornings and clinics and all the way at night. No, it doesn't really work that way. Teams do train. Not in the same way. It's not as competitive, as crazy as in the US, as I remember anyway, in Atlanta. But again, mainly you live from the junior programs, attracting the whole family to the tennis club. Another interesting fact now that I think about it is the population pyramid of Germany is completely inverted. So the population is getting a lot older. So the generation that is playing tennis is now in the 60s, 70s, 80s. And is now the struggle of pushing the young generations to actually play. That's the challenge.
Yeah. And speaking of challenges, what were some of the biggest challenges you had running a tennis club? I mean, we already kind of talked about the cultural and the language difference, but once you got going in the business and you had built it up, what were some of the main challenges or biggest lessons, whatever you want to share with us, that you learned from that experience?
You ask very good questions.
Take your time.
Look, business-wise, I think something that helped us a lot was we were very clear on who we were and who we wanted to serve. So it was almost like a cult in a way, or like, it was funny. It felt like the Vatican in Rome. We were in Germany, but we spoke English. Uh-huh. Most of our first, second generation kids went to America. We talked about American and college tennis because we were about that. And we wanted to serve a lot of that audience that wanted something different. And even when we were having events, they had a flair or different touch to it. We would mimic, I don't know, the champagne and the, it's not champagne, but Prosecco is what they drink, and strawberries for Wimbledon, and have a different event when we did it. We play music when it wasn't the norm. We kind of tried to differentiate ourselves in that sense, and everybody knew who a base tennis kid was and who wasn't, or even parents. That was one that I think, and we kept it everywhere. The way you treated people, the way you communicated in the court, outside the court. So that was one thing that I think helped us a lot. And the second one is Europe is competitive in terms of level of coaching. There are many, many good coaches with many, many good clubs. And that's when we started also figuring out that we need to do something different. And that was when we jumped into technology. And that was in 2014. My business partner saw an ad of PlaySide, and we were crazy enough to be early adopters of it, and we put it all over the place. And that was a big risk at that time, but it worked out for us very well. And those are the two things that at that moment, a lot of people were doing already analytics and stuff like that, but just by taking that leap of faith at that moment, it changed our whole business completely.
I think it's also inevitable for you to be different because you are different. You come from South America and you went to school in the US. So as much as you try to adjust and adapt, you can't help but be different. So you have a different way of thinking. You have a different set of eyes than like the usual German club owner. So you're naturally going to bring in new ideas. And I love that you went into technology. So that's kind of what I want to go into next is how was that transition for you? It seems like it started with PlaySide, which is now everybody knows PlaySide. It's at many different clubs, and it's at the USTA here in the US. But tell us, how did you transition from running a tennis club to now being in the tech world?
It kind of worked out by itself. When we got PlaySide, because of the location of the academy between Cologne and Frankfurt, it was really easy, accessible for any of their clients. So when they wanted to show their product, they asked us to do that. So the first time was a favor. Second time is a favor. Third time, fourth time, fifth time. At some point, we were like, this is a business. So we expanded, and that's when we did Base Edge and decided to help them grow their market in Europe. So we started with English-speaking countries, Germany, Austria, and Switzerland. Once we got that under control, then we went to what is called Benelux at the north, the Netherlands, Luxembourg, and Belgium. And then because we had, our team was also very multicultural. We have a Brazilian guy, a Bulgarian guy, a guy from Czech, a guy from Hungary. So we could speak many languages. Then we went Spain and Portugal. So it was a really great experience because it was learning, and it was learning about technology, selling technology. But this one is hard one because hardware, and that makes it tricky. Hardware and software is both different. And then it was also getting to know Europe, the federations, the clubs in Europe, the academies in Europe, and that kind of progressing to helping people understand what they should be looking at when they are trying to implement technology in any way, in any organization. So that's how it kind of went from being a club to then growing to technology.
Were you basically hired by PlaySide?
No, we weren't. We had to set up a business in Germany, a legal entity, and they were paying retainers for us as consultants.
Oh, consulting. Okay.
To work the space, the market for them. So that's how we set it up at the beginning. And that's how it was. I mean, yeah, we were not hired by them, but we were consulting for them, and pretty much the main revenue came from it. And it was a win-win situation. We also were getting shares if we did well in sales and stuff like that. So that was a great, great experience for us. And then we started working with other companies. At that time, Babola came up with the Babola Play Racket. Remember, with like at the bottom had some sort of sensors. So it was super neat to see those kind of products really, really early. They were a partner of us. And then a Slinger came along. And that was also a great experience. That was also really fun. And the moment that we really understood sports tech was when the pandemic came. Because at that moment, Jennifer, we were struggling financially. It was like, what do we do? And yes, we also got grants from the government and everything, but it was surviving. Like, you had to find out how you get
earn money. We're all just trying to survive that year.
We were, all of us. And who luck, where luck. Again, we had great partnerships. We have been talking to DTB. We have been helping them also get into what live streaming could look like for them in a partnership with PlaySide and so on. So we started learning what data rights and media rights could mean and what they are worth and how you negotiate them. Mm-hmm. And again, crazy. This is a crazy story. We brought tennis back after the pandemic. We beat everybody else because Germany opened the doors first. We had the technology to live stream. We had a partner that could do that, Sports Radar. And we had tennis players. We had Dustin Brown and Yannick Hafman and a bunch of guys that could play here. And Germany opened the doors first. So we had everything and it just worked out. So that's how everything has been kind of evolving into one and the next one and the next one.
And how do you see European clubs, European clients embracing technology? And I don't know if you can compare it to the US, because I feel like, here people tend to be kind of, well, it depends on the generation, I think, but it tends to be that clubs are kind of wary of technology and pros are kind of wary of technology unless they're in an academy setting or something like that. How did that look for you?
It's even tougher. The US is actually a good market to go.
Oh, really?
The US is much more open, much more innovative in that sense. I also have the feeling that in the American market, if you put numbers down and they see a good positive ROI where they can go for it, they go for it. While in Europe, it's a lot much slower. Again, you have different languages, different cultures, different rules. It makes the process a lot much slower. But again, the big ones, the Moro Tuglos of the world, the Rafa Nadals of the world, the Ferreros, guys, they are not waiting. They are going because they are competing with IMG and Chris Evert and you name all of the ones in the US. So they are in a different category.
And anything that gives them an edge in competition to recruit players and attract clients, they're going to go for that.
They are going to go for it. There's no holding back on that one.
What do you think are the most exciting things going on in the technology world in tennis, obviously, today?
Let me try to break these down so maybe it makes more sense. So there are mainly four spaces where you could use technology. So one is like the operations administration of a club. The other part that you have is the development and the performance of the athlete. Then you have another bucket where is recruitment, agents, and so on. And the last bucket is where you have fans, sponsors, and fan engagement. So when you look at those four, I am really, really excited about athlete development and performance in general, but also for tennis. And I think we will see very soon a change in the way recruiting and agency is done in the tennis world as well. In terms of athlete development, well, in general, technology is getting more accessible. It's easier to use. It's cost effective. Still not where we should be, but much better. In terms of tennis, the development of an athlete and the performance. I guess I gotta take a step back. The amount of data that we are gathering on athletes is in the millions and is only growing. That's where it gets exciting. Okay? So the data that we are generating and gathering is no more comprehensive for a human. So that said, the kind of the quality of the data that we're getting is much better. So wearables alone are giving a lot of insights. Water rings, Whoops, even iWatch, Garmin, they are getting very high quality data. And that you can definitely use for the development and the performance of the athlete. The quality of video, which is still king, is also improving and getting a lot much more accessible. You can go all the way from Hawkeye, all the way down to just having a phone in your hand and filming yourself and using any of the platforms right now out there providing a service. So it's super, super exciting. And what is also changing and shifting is the big federations already are kind of understanding this. Not all the way, but kind of understanding this is by gathering the videos. And what AI can do by now would already add a lot of value to it. But this is where I see the flip. And it's the recruitment and the agents. They will have access in the long tail, thousands and thousands and thousands of athletes playing, access to video. And this is where I see a shift where it's changing because you also have NCAA, you have the NIL happening as well, social media. It's crazy what young generations right now do. They are so good at TikToking and creating videos, entertaining people. So I'm seeing this coming. And the big federations are understanding. The big seven understood this for sure. ATP, WTA, ITF, and, well, the four Grand Slams.
Are you saying that this data is going to help people recruit in the sense that you'll be able to make better predictions on who's going to be a success? Is that what you're saying?
And not only that, the accessible. A guy playing in Africa, a guy playing in countries where are remote, there's not easy access to athletes. Mm-hmm. ITF can start already putting cameras on that one, or Tennis Europe is already doing it with Baseline Vision. You would have all the data about these athletes, and it's going to be worth, not today so much, but in the next 5 years. It's going to be a lot, because when we understand AI, they need deep learning, they need a lot of data, the algorithm needs to really have a lot of data. And the quality of the data is getting better and better and better. So this is where I'm really excited, because biomechanics is improving, all the details of like first points, four points or four touch of the ball, returns, like first serves, all those things are okay, it's fine, good data, but we're going to have a much more holistic understanding of the athlete. Wearables are going to help us a lot to get this story.
What would you say to a coach that it's old school, maybe afraid of technology or afraid of using technology, afraid of technology taking over our jobs. I don't think that would ever happen. I think these are tools that will make us better coaches, because the more information you have, the better service you can provide, I think. But what would you say to that coach?
First of all, that the pain is real. The challenge is real. Mm-hmm. It's not that they are old school only, or they are only close-minded. Maybe there's a little bit to it, but the pain points are for real. Like, you, there's some people that really are afraid of using technology. They don't know how to go with it.
Yeah.
Something that you also see when the coach nowadays wants to use, let's say, the phone, which is the easiest tool that we have, and the athlete uses the phone better and teaches you how to do it. You cannot lose authority in that relationship, in that power relationship. And what I'm asking or telling the people that are in that situation is, like, just slow down and be humble. It's okay. You can learn from them and they can learn from you. Like, there's a shift in the way they do this. But the two other things that you definitely want to say to someone in that position is, number one, we are here to serve. We are here to help the people that we work with. And if you work with younger players, athletes, we have to adapt. If we want to serve them best, they don't have to adapt to us. We work in the service industry. It's just the way it is. So we are the ones that need to start understanding how these younger generations are communicating, what language they are using, what tools they are using, so we can actually relate to them better. That's one part of it. And the second is, nobody knows where technology is heading. Are we going to lose our jobs, or are we going to improve them? I don't know. This, don't quote me on this one. I'm on probably being recorded, but it's like, back in the Middle Ages, or before that, it was like 80% of the population was working in farming. Today is less than 2% of the population, and we're still fine. Jobs change because people had to adapt. And that's what's happening.
Yep.
As a coach, you have to adapt. If you don't learn how to use tech or find someone that can help you work with tech, at some point, you won't be relevant. But not because the tech got you out of the job. It's because you didn't do your homework when you should have done it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm right there with you. And I think what can be kind of frustrating with technologies is that once you feel that you've mastered one, a better one comes along. So it's like constant learning of different technologies and different tools that you can use. But like you said, we are in service of people. So whatever can help us serve people better, we have to get with it. There's no other way around it.
And to your point, you bring up a very, very good point. The other change is in the way of thinking about the game. It's not, if I do well, you don't do well, we don't collaborate. It's like, how can we make the pie bigger for everyone? How can we actually make more people play whatever racket sports that we're talking about? So when you, let's say, I cannot keep up with all the tech, and that is absolutely fine, but you're going to have to start working with other coaches in other academies that are good at these things. And you're going to have to be humble enough to say, this is not where I'm best at, but I want to serve you and I want to go with you all the way so this person can work with us. This is also what I'm starting to see, some synergies, because as I said, Jennifer, it's impossible for one person to be good at every single thing that we are looking at right now in the sports. So this is the next shift in mindset. How can we collaborate? How can we help each other? What are your strengths with combined with my strengths and still make the pie bigger? That's another point. Brilliant that you bring that up.
Thanks. All right. So anything else you want to talk about in regards to technology before we move on to a different topic that I want to talk to you about?
In terms of tech, if you want to get started, consider this. Don't go for the next fancy technology out there. Just like you would build your own tennis player, go from your strengths. What are you curious about? What do you want to learn about? And then start messing with the technology that does that. So if you're into analytics, then do that. But if you are into the admin side of it, then do that. And then start seeing, and that's what I hope people kind of see, the bigger picture. Step away and say, this is not a silo. This is an ecosystem. And how can we actually make it work flawless together?
Perfectly said. All right. So I want to talk to you about Win the Toss. I saw your website and I found it very interesting, especially because you are in the tech world now. You've kind of left the business side of running a club and being in that environment, working with coaches, training coaches. And Win the Toss seems to be precisely kind of taking you back to that. So I want to kind of hear from you about what inspired you to go back into this and tell us what it's about and where do you see it going in the future?
I'm so grateful to tennis. That's the only thing I can say. Like, because of tennis, I have been, I don't know, traveled, met people, places. It's paying forward, I guess, in a way.
Yeah.
I don't know, because running the business, I was really onboarding a lot of our coaches in the academy. And I found myself repeating myself all the time and having a conversation with my business partner. I said to him, tennis coaches are trained to teach the game of tennis, to coach. But tennis coaches are the sales representatives of a tennis club.
100%.
And do they have the skills to communicate, to persuade, to negotiate, to market, to sell? I'm like, no, they don't. So once I saw that, I started with my own team. I am so grateful to Lucas and Martin because they heard me talk about this and I made them read books about sales and what they were looking at. But Jennifer, again, I mean this, is how can I help you? What can I do for you today? It's almost that customer service mindset of how do I get you to onboard into tennis, adapt tennis, or racket sports for that matter, how we work on keeping you at the club, then expanding on the services that we can provide to you and make you like delighted that this is the best thing that you can do. So all that, I was a bit frustrated with the industry, the professionalism. I would get emails from people like, my name is Ruben, I want a job. Do you have one? And I'm like, okay.
Oh, or still get those emails, by the way, or DMs.
Another one like would be like, hi, my name is Ruben, and they would see me, and like not even like all emails 10 academies at the same time, and I'm like, are you serious? Or they would send me like the certificate like on a PDF and then a picture, and you couldn't and I was like, this is not how I hope this industry behaves. Like, we need to be professional. Like, LinkedIn exists, for goodness sakes. You can have a cover letter dedicated to the base tennis if you want to send one, and then you send one to the next tennis club and then the next tennis club and you find out who they are. So anyway, when I started seeing this, I was like, I wasn't doing anything about it. And I'm like, I'm complaining and that's not enough. I need to do something about it. So I started writing and I put the ebook. You can go to the website, it's for free. Don't want to make money out of it. That's not what I want to do. So I'm trying to now help racket sports be more professional in that sense, communication mainly, tech, what can they do? It's just a multiplier. And probably the last one is, again, I cannot help being a coach. He's like, what do you want? What do you want from all this, from your life? What kind of coach do you want to be? What kind of person do you want to be? And at some point, I think those are the nice conversations that I love to have. Those are the conversations that I have with my players that were more interesting than the forehand, the backhand, or the winning or losing. So probably I would like to do that now for the coaching industry.
Were you certified? Did you get any certifications when you were a tennis pro?
I did. I got the most, this is embarrassing to admit, but I'll say it because it's true. I got the most basic certification there was, so I could legally work in Germany. To all fairness, I was more interested in growing the business than being the guy at the box at a Grand Slam or whatever you want to call it. Like, that was my job. And besides, because I was co-owner of the company, more important to me was that my coaches were getting their certifications and even higher level of education than I had in terms of coaching. I guess I was good just because I was a good communicator. I understood the game fair enough, well enough. And look, we sent 18 kids to the US in 18 years. And I worked with most of them. So I must have done something right. But I didn't have all the education that I've seen. And I think it's so important for anybody in this industry. But again, this is where I also get a bit annoyed with it. If you want to come to Germany, just to give an example, and you say, I'm going to be a tennis coach, you don't get a visa because you don't need a university degree to be a tennis coach. So that upset me. I mean it. It got me really, because I have met amazing, wonderful coaches that have done a lot more for me than school teachers. So I was like, these guys are serving men and women that are wonderful. They need the tools to communicate, to actually earn the money that they need to earn, position themselves, they need to be positioned. And if you don't talk about those things, they won't be able to do it. So that's one of the reasons I also started writing about these things. It upsets me. It really does, because I've seen them.
I always say certifications are really important. And I think it's a base. It's just a base. There's so much more that you have to learn after getting certified. I think the certification is basically just to get you on the court. After that, there's so much more that you need to learn from hands-on experience, but also from just going out of your way to learn about the business side of it, the communication side of it, all kinds of things that, unfortunately, the teaching associations, I don't think, do a good job at teaching us. And whether they should or they shouldn't, that's a different conversation. I don't think that they do, that I have seen at least. I think they do a good job at teaching you how to coach and how to do drills. But all the other thousand things that you need to learn in order to have a sustainable career for your life as a tennis professional, not just be on the court all day. If that's what you want, great. But some of us want a little bit more than that, and that's okay to admit. I think that you need to really go out of your way, and I've had to, as a pro myself, go out of your way to learn from other places. And I'm hoping that this podcast serves in a small way to provide some form of education and connection for people that are in this industry to at least have a resource out there that they can learn from. So that's the whole point of me doing this.
And you're doing it. Listen to many of the conversations you have had here. And 100%, you are leveling the game up.
Well, that's the goal. What would you say you talked about sales, but what would you say is one of your main focus as a coach now of coaches that you want to impart on your students? Is it sales tactics? Is it business administration? What would you say?
Look, I think tactics get you through the door. They are nice. People want to have the next hack, the next shortcut that will get me this and that. I don't believe in them so much. I think people should probably understand things from fundamentals and principles. And that's where probably I would like to head towards. Principles on communication, persuasion, sales, marketing probably be more helpful. Would somebody know how to do digital marketing better than I can? 100%. And that's okay. But if you don't have the foundations and understanding what, again, segmentation would be, positioning would be, having a unique selling proposition, how you present that, it doesn't matter if you have a star, because you don't have the basic knowledge of doing this. Somebody has to educate you on this. Or in bringing coaching to the courts, if you don't teach the fundamentals, doesn't matter if you teach the best, you have the best video analysis tool. Doesn't matter. You still have to do it. So that's where I think I put my time and effort towards trying to help shift the paradigms, the way of thinking in our industry, more like collaborative, synergetic way. That's where I would love to head the conversation towards. But we'll see how we get there. I don't know yet.
Yeah. And I mean, this is one of my questions I wanted to ask you today. Of course, we've talked about changes in the industry, but I like to ask my guests if there's any changes that you would like to see in the industry. And obviously we've touched on some of them, but have we missed one that you're particularly passionate about?
I see two that I'm super excited about. The whole pickleball, paddle, tennis, racket sports story. I actually think that they should live together, work together. And I am excited about that one. Again, because I'm thinking of not the sport, but the customer or the person I'm trying to serve. And we may be expanding the lifetime value of that customer. We're expanding the services that we provide to them. We can do a lot more for them. And that, I think, is actually pretty neat. I also think it's going to be much better to get little kids play racket sports, because those two are much easier than tennis at the beginning anyway. So that's one trend that I'm looking at, very excited. And the second one that I'm seeing that is quite related is health and racket sports. Again, they're very, very related to each other. Those are the two things that I'm seeing, besides the ones that we talked about, that I'm like, I would love to see more of that. And we have wearables. I mentioned that already.
So what do you mean health and tennis?
To me, it's crazy that cardio tennis is not like Zumba. That's unthinkable. Such an amazing product from the health fun side of it that relates to racket sports. And it's not like Zumba, that drives me off the wall. I'm like, why not? And I also have the privilege to work with a couple of clubs that are working close together with hospitals, for example. And there are many reasons, but tennis is known for being the sport that for the heart does the best. People that play tennis live longer, happier, maybe socioeconomically. Advantages to it, it could be that really is social. It could be that is something you can play pretty much a lifetime. There are many things that are unknown to us, but we know tennis and longevity are related. And people are talking about longevity a lot now. Dr. Peter Attia, for example, is something, if you are interested, that'll be something to read and stuff like that. So it's like, I'm really excited about seeing the insurance industry together with the sports industry, together with the places where we need to help people actually live longer, healthier, better.
I find that interesting too. And I think that we need to market tennis a little bit better, because tennis is, you know, what a study that, I mean, it's been out for a while, but what adds 10 years to your life. And I always tell that to all my students and all the people that I get to see on court is you're doing the best thing for your body in your life right now. You're playing tennis. I market it that way so that people don't just view it as the exercise for the day, but have a vision for themselves of this is a lifetime sport that's going to keep me healthy forever, hopefully, but at least it can help you. So we definitely need to do a better job of marketing the health of tennis to the world.
100%. And I mean it. There's a wave about longevity right now that is big. And you also had someone, I'm sorry, I forget her name. She combined tennis and yoga, for example.
Yeah, Margie.
And that's what I mean. This is a wonderful sport. We just need to start thinking of how I can serve you better. What can I do for you? Not only on a forehand, backhand, serve, return. And that might be the reason why you come to the club at the beginning. But that's not the reason why you stay.
Absolutely. All right, Ruben, we're heading towards the end here. You know, I always like to ask this, what has been the Grand Slam moment and the double bagel moment of your career in the tennis industry?
Double bagel is easy. I actually literally got one on my first state tournament. I literally got one. I think probably the lowest moment in my tennis career was we were trying to make a shift in the program. We were trying to go more towards performance. And that's actually written in the guide. I went to a presentation. I thought I had it nailed down, Jennifer. And I got chewed up by the parents because I was literally not well prepared to sell tennis and the program that we were doing. And funny enough, that experience took probably a good 3 months for me to get over it, which is really strange. I did my job. I was professional. I was fine. But I had something in my stomach that I was like, I didn't like it. So that was really low. And the highlight, probably not one, is I still have the relationship with the kids that I work with close. And they are now at universities. I'm old now, I guess. So when they message me still, when they touch base, that means the world to me. And I'll take that as the biggest win.
That's awesome. And don't worry, we've all had low moments at one point or another with the parents, because parents can be brutal at times. And I've talked about that a lot on the podcast too, is dealing with parents and trying to understand them and how to deal with those situations. But they can be brutal, especially when you're new to coaching and you're not prepared because you've never had to do that before.
Never did that before.
It can be brutal.
It is. Live and learn.
Yeah, exactly. You do it and you learn how to do it better the next time. Well, thank you so much, Ruben. Tell people how they can find you if they want to reach out to you.
My Instagram is boring, it's personal. My Twitter is boring, it's personal. Find me on LinkedIn. If you really are serious about having a conversation, I will answer right away. That's the best place.
All right. Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Vita Tennis. Please help support the show by leaving a review on the podcast platform that you're listening from or sharing our content on social media so that we can reach more listeners. You can visit our website at vitatennispodcast.com for all things Vita Tennis, including how to contact me. I appreciate your support. Thank you, and see you next time for a conversation with Ashley Owens from Court Reserve. See you then.